I started recording because I wanted this episode to be like super off the cuff, if you don't mind.
No, not at all. Welcome to Up on Foil, our podcast where we talk to people about being on foil. And this is episode number 10, special episode because actually you're my guest now. And I'm looking forward to it. You told me your story already, but I forgot a few things probably, so I'm eager to listen to you. Tell us your story, man.
I probably told you like a shorter version. I didn't tell you like everything. So yeah. First of all, thank you very much, Matt, for this one, because I'm gonna be sort of like honest. I've been looking forward to recording this video since I was 16, and I'm not even joking. I'm gonna tell you how or why in a moment. But yeah, if it's like you asking questions and I'm speaking to you with you, it's gonna be less sort of like a selfish video. So so yeah, thank you for this, and thank you for the idea. Anyway, so I said that I've been looking forward to recording like to making this sort of video since I was 16, because when I was 16, it was summer and you know, school break, and I started working because I wanted to make some cash. I didn't want just to chill out all day long. And then I was actually cleaning cars for $4 an hour. And I remember that my pay, like I would earn more from the coins that I would find in the cars rather than the pay itself. And while I was watching those cars, I was super into YouTube. I was watching YouTube videos all day long, and I loved YouTube. And I was like, one day I'm gonna make something better than cleaning cars, and I'm gonna make a video about it. I'm gonna make a video telling my story. So this is kind of like that video. That's why I'm excited about this. But yeah. From there, I did all sorts of things. Of course, I finished my studies. I mean, I struggled to them. I was able to finish my high school, and I did a lot of jobs during that time. I was able to save quite a solid amount of cash, and I made a lot of experiences. But I always had this idea in mind that I would be an entrepreneur sooner or later in my life. I wanted to have my own thing. And yeah, I did a lot of jobs, and I don't regret anything, because all the jobs that I made, lifeguard, pizza chef, waiter, like all sorts of things, every single job that I made gave me something, and so I don't regret anything, actually.
What was your favorite of these jobs?
Oof. None? No, come on. Chilling out as a lifeguard in a lake in Italy, it was quite nice, actually. So yeah, and then after that, oh yeah, by the way, you're probably wondering how I got on foil, like how I discovered foiling and stuff.
That is one pretty of the basic questions here. Yeah, obviously. Yeah, go ahead.
I think just like probably half of the people who got into palm foiling, I just saw a wake tip video. I was scrolling through lots of YouTube at the time, and I stumbled on a wake tip video, and I absolutely fell in love with it, because back in Italy, where I grew up and was living, like no wind, and of course no sea in the Italian Alps. And yeah, just lots of lakes. So I got into it straight away. If you saw my story video, of course, with the right gear, with the wrong technique, everything wrong. That's why it took me probably too much to actually learn it. But yeah, and then this was when I was finishing high school. Then I finished high school with the lowest grade in my class. I want to specify this. And then it was a pretty tough period of my life, because I didn't really know what to do, and I was trying since many months to enter the military to follow kind of like the steps that my father took at my age, at 19 years old. But I was rejected from every single corp because of my color blindness. So I was like, wow. out. I probably did like 8 or 9 how it's called, like when you go there, like assessments, you have to make a test,
like trials, something.
Yeah. I was traveling from northern Italy to Rome every week almost, just to try to join the military or something. But yeah, I wasn't lucky. And then it was actually, yeah. And then I was confused, right? And I, it was like October, so after the summer, and I was still like clueless. So I actually started studying IT out of nowhere. And I knew that, I knew it from the first week that that wasn't my thing. But I said, okay, I don't want to disappoint my parents. I'm going to try to finish this, these studies and to get a job. And then eventually maybe I'm going to get sort of like a online job so that I can still travel and do something different than going in an office, which is not in line with my lifestyle, let's say. But I remember it was painful. Because
was there pressure from your parents, or was just you thinking that they want to see you prosper?
Just me, because my parents have always been very, very open. They always let me do whatever I thought was best for me. Of course, they would give me suggestions like, I don't think that's a good idea, something like that. But yeah, I was lucky from this point of view, of course. But yeah. After that, so yeah, I remember it was painful because I would wake up every morning at 5 a.m. I would dress up, have breakfast, and then I would take a train an hour. I mean, I would drive to the train station in the cold, rain, snow sometimes, and then I would take I would catch this train. I would stand for an hour on the train because there were no places, and then I would get to Turin, which was like the closest big city. Then I would train in gym. I was a gym addict back then. And then at 9, I would go to university, and sometimes until 6 p.m. and then train back to my little town. And then, yeah, this was pretty much my life. And I knew that this wasn't my path, because, if I would have kept doing those studies, that would have been my life forever. So I was absolutely not happy about that. And inside this, like amongst this not really being happy of my life, like 1 year before, I got into trading, because again, I had this entrepreneurial push, and I thought that with trading I would make money and being able to quit my studies. And then after making mistakes, after losing money, I was actually, I actually started getting profitable. And, when you start getting profitable, you get kind of cocky, right? So I didn't take lots of risks besides keeping all my money, all my savings, which for 18, 19 years old were not bad, because again, I worked since I was 16, and I always saved everything, every single dollar. I saved it because I grew up with this probably not super correct mindset, like scarcity mindset, because that's how I was grew up. So I saved everything, and then when I started trading, I put everything in there, and then I had all my liquidity in this platform that eventually, in like 2 years ago, yeah, autumn 2022, crashed, like bankrupted.
Which one was so, that?
FTX.
Yeah.
So I lost all my money. And like the same week, or like those days, I also my ex-girlfriend broke up with me. So on top of this, I was clueless. Like I didn't know what to do with my life. So it was a pretty tough period of my life. But then I struggled through winter. And then I got until spring. It was spring 2023. Yeah, spring 2023. And I did this solo camping trip on a tiny island close to Lanzarote, which is almost desert. And I would say that there, like doing like nothing, let's say, besides trying to to catch something to eat for like 5 days. I found myself. Oh, by the way, this video is actually on my channel. If you scroll down, it's one of my first videos. Yeah, so it's like 50 minutes long. It's just like me naked on a desert island doing things, spear fishing.
Check that later.
but yeah, there. I would say that I understood what I wanted to do with my life. Like I wanted to do that. I wanted to create content. I wanted to just live into nature, close to the sea, spearfish, surf, and just take care of my family. So I came back from that trip, and like after a few days, few weeks, I dropped the uni to get a job as a flight attendant.
And, how did your parents react to that?
So it was actually my father who first told me, "Hey, listen, there is this recruitment day for this position. Why don't you try it?" And I was like, "Okay, everything which is not going to lessen, let's do it." So I went there like this. I just went there again just to skip uni, and then I actually got accepted. And like 1 week later, I flew to Poland to do my training, which was a pretty fun period of my life compared to what was the previous period. You know, Poland, Polish chicks, training. So it was quite nice. But but yeah, after that, I got to choose the base. You know, I could have chosen Italy, Rome, Milan, but I actually decided to take a leap, and I just chose to be based in Cyprus. That's how I got here. Because for whoever wondering, I'm living in Cyprus currently, Larnaca, so in the southern part, in the Greek part, and it's a lovely place, by the way. But yeah, I got here because of that.
And but, when did that exactly?
August 2023.
All right.
I landed here the 5th August 2023 with nothing, like probably 500 bucks, because I spent all my cash somewhere else, like bikes, lost it through trading, and all this kind of thing. So I came here literally with my foil, a bunch of clothes, my bicycle, and that's it, and 500 bucks. And I had like an Airbnb paid from my dad for like 1 week, and then I had to find an apartment, which is not absolutely easy here in Cyprus, especially in summer. But yeah, eventually I did it. I kind of settled here in Cyprus, and I was doing this job, and it was fine. Okay, yeah, it was almost like being on holiday, right? Because you're not working that much when you're a flight attendant in Europe, because there is this limitation that you cannot really spend more than 100 hours in the air. So at the end of the day, you're not really working that much. You're probably working 12, 15 days a month. They had lots of
so free time. Just let me ask you, yeah, there. 100 hours per month.
Yeah, in the air.
All right. Yeah.
Which is not that much. It's probably less than any other normal job. And the pay it's like a normal job, a normal position. I had kind of like a lot of spare time. So I decided to get back into making YouTube videos, because when I was going to uni, after losing all my money into trading, I didn't want to trade anymore. So I wanted to do something else, right? And back then, so when I was still in university, I started creating content in the gym industry. I wanted to become a gym influencer. And I even developed a product. I wrote a book with like... It was a massive book. It took me like 6 months to create it. And in my head, I would create this book, and then I would record and publish on YouTube one video. And through one video, I would have been able to sell 7,000 of these ebooks. And that's how I would have made 100K. This was my idea, right? And of course, I spent 6 months creating that ebook, and then I made the video. And I sold 0 copies. So I was pretty disappointed. But yeah.
Is the video still up?
It is. It's the first video on my channel. It's my body transformation.
It's the 4 years natural transformation.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. But it's got 7,000 views, huh?
Yeah. But no sales. Yeah.
All right.
But yeah, and then I stopped actually creating content because I became a flight attendant. And then when I had lots of spare time, like a year ago, I was like, okay, I wanna get back into creating content. And I was looking at my YouTube channel, and the only video that did pretty well, beside the first one, was a random foil video that I posted May 2023. So I was like,
is that
okay.
The go from this to this, avoid these mistakes when learning point foiling?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. That video. And so I was into it. I was trying to point foil here in Cyprus with that bad set. And I just started creating content. That's how I got on YouTube. And I actually started liking the fact that I was actually helping people. That's why I actually stuck to it. I haven't really been able until that point in my life to stick to something. I was always jumping from one job to the other, from one thing to the other. But the fact that I was actually helping someone kept me motivated and kept me accountable, because I knew that I needed to improve to help the other people that were watching my videos. So if it wasn't for the YouTube channel, I would have quit, because normally I probably don't have that much discipline to stick to something so hard. And like, you know, after 1 year or something and you still don't have any results and even spent money on it, it's quite frustrating. But I had a YouTube channel, so I stuck to it, and eventually I succeeded thanks to the right set and the new YouTube videos that were coming out at that time from Wake Thief, but also Gwen, but also Dominic. He's not really publishing anymore because he's we spoke to him in the previous episode. He's working. He's covering a big position into Foil Drive Europe. That's why he doesn't have that much time to create content right now. But his videos were very, very helpful at that time. But yeah, and then it was like winter last year, so December, yeah, October, November, December. I was working, I was creating some content, and then I wanted to do something more because I still had this entrepreneurial push. I wanted to have my own thing. So I started my little videography freelancing, right? So I would knock to every single little small business in Larnaca, in my city, asking if they needed a commercial video. And I think I asked probably 100 shops, and I got like probably one or two clients. Also because it was winter, like no winter here is kind of dead. No, and nobody is willing to invest cash in winter because they're just enjoying the cash that they made in summer. they don't need to advertise anything during winter. So yeah, that wasn't really working until one day, because I'm not really a party guy. I'm not really. I don't like to drink. I don't drink. I don't like to go out and for a beer. That's not something that I'm really into. And I've never had that many friends. I would really rather read, create content, edit videos, foil, train in the gym, and spend time on my own. So, but one day, this colleague goes, "Why don't you come? We're gonna have a drink after work." So. Okay, I don't know why I said yes. And there, out of nowhere, I met my mentor, sort of like, which is probably the reason why now I'm where I am. His name is George. We're going to, by the way, make a cool challenge. We're going to start in 2 days. We're going to march across Greece. So he's going to march, he's going to walk, run from the most northern part of Greece to the most southern part of Greece, and I'm going to be his crew. So I'm going to drive the caravan and create content for him. But yeah, this was just another little thing. So that's if you want to follow the journey, he has a YouTube channel, of course, and I'm going to post something as well. But yeah,
can we link that to this episode afterwards?
For sure. I'm going to add a card or something. But we met, and I immediately felt that he was different. And we started talking, and he mentioned that he was an entrepreneur, he had a company, blah, blah, blah. So, okay, cool. We started going to the gym together. And then I actually started working for him. I started editing his own videos, and I was giving him suggestions on how to record better content and how to get maybe more clients through content. Because I always liked like sales and marketing. I was reading lots of books, and then I was a videographer, so I had some videography skills, let's say. That's why probably usually my videos have, I hope, quite a nice quality. But yeah, and then actually, again, I started working for him. And after 1 month or so, I just realized that, yeah, that was cool, but I was just, again, I was just trading my time for money, and that wasn't my thing. So I started outsourcing the editing that he would assign me to other people in the east of the world through platforms absolutely legal, such as Upwork and Fiverr. And it clicked. Okay, if I can get more clients like him, I can outsource the job and I can take a percentage, like he stay with a retainer, like with some margin. And that's how I realized that the way to go for me was a marketing agency. So it took me a little bit of time to realize it and to get my stuff together. But in April, I actually really started working hard on client acquisition. And I even invested money in another mentor to understand what I needed to do, to have some guidance and some accountability. And yeah, like the first 3 months were absolutely painful and nothing was working, as I suppose it's normal. But then things actually got better and better.
What do you mean it didn't work? Weren't you happy with the things that were edited and you had to do it all over again? Or how do you mean?
No, I didn't have many problems on that side. Like training people is not something that is that hard. Yeah, finding the right people is not easy, but then training them is not that hard if you have some experience. The hardest part was literally getting clients, because you need to find the right people, you need to reach out to those people, and it's like cold outreach. So it's not that easy to build trust and to get people to pay you quite a solid amount of cash on a monthly basis for your services. You are promising something that's, you are a stranger and they have to trust you with their money. So it's not that easy. But yeah, and then I actually started earning some decent cash, and in September 9, 2024, I finally quit my job. I wanted to do it for like 2 months, but every time I would go there to speak to my manager to tell her that I would quit, I couldn't. I was too scared to do so. Until one day I was like super pissed after a flight. So instead of just heading to the exit after the flight, I just headed to the office, and out of like anger, I just went there and said, I quit. And yeah, that's what I do now, essentially. I work, I'm scaling my marketing agency, and it's not fancy. It's nothing good. Like we see online all these maybe young entrepreneurs who are like living in Dubai, like living the life, traveling. That's not how it is, or at least that's not how it is in the first stage. Like many people will say that my life is sad because I wake up early in the morning. I just work from like 6 a.m. until like 9, fasted, and then I eat something, and then I work again until 2 p.m., and then I eat something, and then I work again until maybe 5, when maybe I go foiling or to the gym, and then I come back home, and I work again until 9 or 10 p.m., and then I go to bed. That's it. That's my life. And one thing that I want to mention is that, it's not like a good life, but I don't feel it. Like when I'm there, I'm just rolling. I'm just going. But
do you enjoy doing the work, or do you not hate it as much as you did the other jobs that you had?
Listen, I believe that life is suffering, but we have the possibility to choose our suffering, and I would rather suffer for 12 hours a day on my shit than clean toilets at 37,000 feet for 100 hours a month. So I choose my suffering, and it's more painful what I'm doing now, way more painful. But I believe that 5 years from now, 6-7 years from now, if I stick to it, and I'm gonna stick to it, it's probably not gonna be that painful anymore. So yeah, I just enjoy the suffering because I know that I'm building something that is gonna be good for myself. But then it's gonna, I always, you know, if you focus on money, if you focus on the result, it's not gonna work. And that's why I struggled so much at the beginning, because I was doing stuff just waiting for the reward, for the client to sign up, or for the money to land in my bank account. But that's not the name of the game. Like, you have to understand that if you do it for money, you're never gonna get it. But if you really care about the people that you're helping, then and you work with people that you actually enjoy working with, then it's a different game. Now
it's more fulfilling.
Absolutely. Like, now, yeah, it's cool to get paid for it, but it is more fulfilling, at least for me, when a client of mine tell me, thanks to you, thanks to your content, I got 4, 5, 6 clients. And that's way more fulfilling, because you realize that you actually made the life of that person better. And that person is actually making the life of other people better. Because I'm working specifically with endurance coaches, because those are the people that I enjoy working with. It's just fulfilling. Yeah, and I know that I always have my vision in mind, which is not money. Money is just the means to the end. Because again, my vision is the one that I had in La Graziosa almost 2 years ago, which is just living on my own, maybe in Australia or somewhere. Where it's hot, close to the ocean, just spearfishing, foiling, and raising my kids. That's it. I think
already a very, very nice story. We're gonna take a quick break, and we're gonna hear from our sponsor. Can you hear anything, Gal?
No,
me neither. We don't have any sponsors. No. If you like this show, if you feel like that's something you want to be part of, hit us up if you want to sponsor these episodes. But that's just a side note. God, are you currently, if you don't mind me asking,
please,
how is life going? Are you earning enough that you can go through life? Is that it? Did you achieve that goal already?
Yeah, I can say that I can live off of what I'm doing. So I can live off of my marketing agency. I cannot live off of foiling yet, but yeah, that's already, that's probably the first step. Yeah.
Can you just plug your agency? Is there a name? Is it just you as a, yeah, as a name, or does it have a name?
Yeah. My name, the name of the agency is Cyrus Labs, but it's very, yeah, just me essentially, just me and a small team to help me out with managing content, outreach and everything. And of course, a few good, well-trained editors. So yeah, I don't want to make any pitch or any sort of like stuff like that. But
let's throw it out there. Do you have a website as well?
It's under construction. It's not really my priority. But it's not hard to reach out to me via Instagram, via email, in the comment section. But yeah, I don't want to sell my services here. But just be aware of that.
For me, if I listen to your story, it's mm-hmm. really, it happened so fast. You say it's 4 years in total, yeah. But that's super fast.
Yeah, you know why? Because a lot of people also that are asking my age, I say I'm 21, and I say like, well, I thought you were 24 from the way you speak, from the way you interact with others. And I believe this is because of two reasons. The first one is because when I was young, like very young, I didn't have any friends. I would just spend time with my father working. and uh, yeah, he 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 had always treated me like I was 5, 6, 7 years older than I actually was. So if I was like 10 years old, he would treat me as a 17 years old. That's why probably I grew up. And then again, I didn't have many friends when I was 17, 18, 19. And especially after breaking up with my girlfriend, I actually got deeply, deeply, deeply into self-improvement. So I channeled all my suffering, all my anger, absolutely anger, into reading, learning, going to the gym, eating clean, and that's my life, like improving and not being happy with what you have at the moment, because if you do so, then you're lost. If you're not striving,
you're striving. I like it. Yeah. I like it. Yeah. How did your parents see, or what did they say when you said that you were going to post things on YouTube? Did they watch your video? Did they comment on it?
That's a very nice question. So my mother was actually watching my videos from a very early stage. I didn't tell anybody, like, I'm making YouTube videos. I didn't tell anybody. I think that my mother found it out, and I think that my father, yeah, he knows it, but I think that he's not watching my videos. He doesn't have much time. By the way, if my father actually watches this video, he doesn't even know at the moment that I quit my job. But yeah, he knows that I'm making some cash, but he doesn't know that I actually quit my job.
All right. Well, that is super interesting. Can we go more into that YouTube creator part?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, please.
If I watch or if I look at your videos, yeah, the first one is, it says a year ago, maybe a little over a year ago. And also, that is a very short amount of time, I think. But the videos and the thumbnails, they get so much more interesting. You're self-taught, so... where did you get the inspiration to do it the way you do? Was that self? Did you like analyze your own videos and then change it due to that? Or did you watch like tutorials and whatnot?
That's a very, very good question. So in terms of editing, I was editing videos because I was a videographer, but I got better over time, of course, just by doing it. Until now, that I'm not really more often not editing my own videos, because of course I have my little team for my marketing agency, so I'm using my little team to edit my own videos as well. But in terms of creativity and understanding what actually works on YouTube, is just experience, and then yeah, learning from others more than anything. Like every piece of content that I post, that you probably post, like we're not reinventing, we don't have to reinvent the wheel, because we just have to do something that it's already proven to work and add our own personality to it. Like often, and I'm not going to lie, I'm not going to hide myself behind a curtain. A lot of the videos that I create is because I take inspiration from someone either in my niche, either in another niche, and I just repurpose the same piece of content with my own style and my own personality. Because at the end of the day, yes, the content is important. It's important to provide value. But the reason why people stick to you is because of the personal brand that you're creating. It's because of the personality that you're bringing on your channel. And I didn't quite understand this at the beginning, but that's basically all what social media is about. That's what I also tell to my clients. Yes, you have to provide value, because you need to give them a reason to stick to your videos. But then the reason why they're going to stick to you and come back to your channel for a long period of time, it's not only because of the value, but it's because they're gonna become friends. Like maybe you as a creator, you don't personally know each and every of your followers personally, but they know you as if you were friends, like literally. And that's my opinion.
How do you choose to make a video? And is it, how important are comments and likes and view numbers for you?
Mm-hmm. So I didn't like at the beginning I was super focused on views, subscribers, but my channel took off when I actually started not caring about that. So when you don't care about the outcome and you just focus on the activity, because let's face it, we cannot control the result, we cannot control really how a video is going to perform. I cannot control when I'm going to get a new client for my agency. I cannot decide that. I can only control the input, the activity that I put into it. So I can only control the amount of outreach that I make to get new clients. I can control the amount of videos that I post on YouTube or on Instagram, the quality, the editing, the thumbnail. I can just control the input, and that you can just get better or increase the volume of the input to expect a different outcome that than the current, right?
But so, if you choose to make a video, do you know this is going to be a banger? People are going to watch that, going to share that? Or are you like, all right, let's throw it out there. I think it's good. Let's see what happens.
So at the beginning, it was pretty much, let's just throw it out there. And then I actually started giving a bit more thoughts, yeah, about what I do. But at the end of the day, yes, like, we cannot say that it's mathematical. You know, you can make a very good video, and you know, maybe the hook is good, is cleanly edited, and you think that video is gonna go well, isn't? And then it doesn't go well, right? And then, for example, if you scroll on my Instagram account, you can see that a video which I edited in 5 minutes, I recorded by mistake at the beach, got something like 6 million views, and that's the video that got the biggest amount of that brought the biggest amount of followers to my Instagram account, and that was a mistake. So you see, you cannot really control, but you can trick the algorithm in the way that you can make it impossible to not get noticed. So if you post so consistently and with a quality which is above average, you reach a point where it's impossible to not get noticed within your niche. So I believe that especially at the beginning, volume is better than quantity, than dead quality, sorry. So volume is better than quality. And then, right now I'm not really posting twice a week on YouTube anymore as I used to. I'm not really posting every day on Instagram as I used to, because, you know, I have other things to do. But at some point probably you have to switch from quantity to quality. And at that time, in that moment, when you make this transition from volume to quality, then you probably have to start giving a bit more thoughts about the content that you're producing.
I'm going to ask you the same question that I asked Ludo a couple of episodes ago. I think it was episode number 5. Mm-hmm. Do you ever go pump foiling without recording?
Yes. But I would say it's probably 1 out of 10. 1 out of 10 times. Like, I always bring at least the 360 camera, and I try to record at least one or two videos. Like, maybe I'm not planning to record, but I bring it, and then, I don't know, I see something cool that could be recorded, or I get an idea for a piece of content, and I just take the camera out. I think, it probably happened in the last month, in the last probably 6 months, it probably happened 2 or 3 times that I went out with nothing, like, with no camera. Which, in my opinion, is not that good, actually, because, by the way, I wanna mention this also, because one of your questions is probably going to be what's next, I believe.
Yes.
And in terms of what's next, well, for sure, my main priority right now is to grow my agency, but of course, I'm gonna keep creating content, and on the foil side, I want to start doing races, because I got so inspired after the podcast with Gwen. And also I did sort of like a small race at a Ketos event, and it didn't go well, but it was absolutely my fault. I didn't train enough for it, but I just liked it. I used to mountain bike race when I was young, and I was also into like track and field and this sort of things. And I actually miss that strive, that training with a goal, and not just training to get better for yourself, just training because you are competing against somebody else. So yeah, that's motivating, and I'm gonna try to pump foil more and to be a bit more specific with my training, not only in the water but also outside of the water. in the gym and like running with running and stuff, because I want to prepare for next year and try to perform decently in some races, maybe in Switzerland or I don't know.
Yeah, you should come to the Swiss Championship. That was amazing. Listen, one last question about the content.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you earn money on YouTube?
So YouTube works when you reach 1,000 subscribers and 3,000 hours of viewed content, then you can start you can activate the monetization. So YouTube is gonna put more ads in your videos at the beginning and at the end, and you can also activate the ads throughout the video, which is gonna make you earn a bit more. Now I checked it today for the first time because I wasn't really I just activated it when I could. And then I checked, and now from the YouTube AdSense, so from the ad that you are watching and then skipping during my videos, I'm earning $100 a month or something like that.
Yeah, so it's not bad. That's not bad, yeah.
Absolutely, yeah, not. But
at the moment, I see 1,800 subscribers and thousands of views.
Yeah, but the. Like I've never really done it because of for money, but yeah, I'm gonna be honest, the biggest money that I got is from sponsorship. They didn't pay me directly, but I got paid let's say in gear, which is huge.
Let's because... get into that, because that was my next question and perfect segue. Thank you very much. The gear, you talked in your video when you told your story how you changed the board, the foil. And then you said you got sent gear by Gong, and I would love to start with that, because that thumbnail where you lie between all your gear that was amazing. How did that happen?
So this is again a very good question. It's a sort of like a funny story, because you know, again, as you post content, as you produce content, you start understanding what might be good, especially within your niche. And I knew that there was a bit of hype around this Gong Clubber, and I needed actually a small board. So before buying my Gong Clubber, which I then reviewed, I actually sent an email to Gong asking to get it with a discounted price or something, and they didn't agree. So I just bought it, and then after the review, I think that a bunch of people bought the board just after my review, because I knew that
I did.
I bought the board because I knew that if I would have made a review, I would have got a lot of views. That's why I got the board. And then one of the viewers was actually Gong, and after the video, they actually sent me an email, and they said it was. I remember it was the day of my birthday. It was March 19, 2024, and I received this email from Gong. We liked your video. We liked your style. We want to send you our gear to test. Let's go. So yeah, they sent me an incredible, insane amount of foils, and I tested them, reviewed them. It was incredibly helpful, because by training so much, by pumping so much with so many different combinations, I really got better, absolutely. And yeah, it was a lovely journey. And then after my hard work, let's say, because still I made quite a few videos, I asked them to keep one set, and they agreed. So I kept my favorite set, which was the 77 Mast, the Cervus XL, and then the Cervus L Stab. And yeah, I just improved and learned with that. And then it was July this year, a couple of months ago. I started looking somewhere else, because I wanted a sort of like a faster wing, because with the Cyrus, you can improve, you can do lots of things. But if you want to get into wave riding, wake diving, then it's a bit limiting. So
and
I was looking
at super
some
heavy as well, isn't it?
It's a like bit heavy. Gear, yeah, it's solid.
I talked to Mirko at the Lake of Zurich. You know Mirko?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. He has your gear. And I used it, and I compared it to the things that I'm using now, and it's super heavy. The pump is fine. The glide is fine. But to lift it up, man, my back.
Yeah. And then, yeah, it was like July. And I actually got a message from Ketos Foil. No, not even. Yeah, it was like super, super random thing because there, one of the guys that was following me, talked about, are you still with me? He disappeared. Okay, Matt disappeared, but it's not a problem. I'm going to keep the episode on my own. Anyway, Ketos Foil actually reached out to me. I mean, this person actually showed my profile to one of the big in Ketos, and they liked it. They liked my profile. And they said, why don't you come and just visit the factory, the small atelier, and then try our stuff. Okay, I said, okay, yeah, let's do this. So I bought with my own money, with my own cash, the plane tickets, and I actually flew there just to visit the atelier and try the gear. And by the way, if you want to see how they made these foils, how they handcraft these foils in France, you can simply check you can simply, Matt is texting me. You can simply check my YouTube channel. If you haven't, there is a video which is called My New Foil is Handmade. And that video is actually recorded inside the factory, how they made these foils. It's pretty interesting. And yeah, I like the foils a lot, but I had to wait 1 month to switch from Gong to Ketos because I wanted to end the relationship with Gong as best as I could, and at the same time it was August, so Ketos was closed, so I needed to wait a little bit for them to finish their holidays and then for them to actually craft my foil, because Matt is back in the meantime. Because yeah, if you order something from Ketos, you have to be willing to wait 1 or 2 weeks for them to actually produce your gear. That's why my switching from Gong to Ketos was delayed until the end of August. When I flew again to France, I recorded another bunch of videos with them, and then yeah, I just got my set, which is the one that I'm using now. I'm super happy about it.
That is really. Can I really just ask you a quick question? Maybe you told it when I was gone. How? Yeah, please. Do you feel when you're there and they just give you the stuff? Is that like, do you feel like overwhelmed, or is it like, yeah, I'm going to make videos for you, so it's fine. How do you feel?
No, that's another incredibly good question, because one of the reasons why my agency wasn't working, and also the reason why I don't feel super comfortable when I receive stuff for free, is because, again, I grew up with this scarcity mentality. So I feel like I don't deserve anything. I always struggled at asking for money. I've never felt comfortable when people were making me a gift or stuff like that, because I always felt like I didn't deserve it. And it was the same, actually. When I got, when Ketos was giving me, like when Cyril was handing me the gear, I was almost embarrassed, because that's quite, you know, quite a few, solid amount of cash, and I felt like I didn't deserve it. But then yeah, then you actually realize that I do deserve it, honestly, because I worked hard for 1 year, almost 2 years, one year. Yeah, it's like I started being consistent with the content creation November 2023, so yeah, now it's almost 1 year that I'm creating content, and yeah, I'm helping people out. So I would say that at this stage, I think I deserve it somehow, yeah. And then, of course,
I totally agree, man.
As you mentioned, you know, I'm also creating content for them sometimes, so yeah.
Yeah, plus when you're around, and we met for the first time in Biel, when you came to Switzerland, people can use the gear, they can test it out, they can try it. So, and sometimes if you hand the gear to someone, they make a little nick, they hit something, and you're actually just helping them out. So I think it's okay. It's perfectly fine,
yeah.
And good.
Exactly. And then, listen, that's how marketing for big companies work. Like if you're a small let's say the coach the coaches that I help, then you have to create content to get some clients. But if you're a big corporate, you can either run ads, but nowadays the ads are super, super expensive and you cannot really target the right people. It's not efficient to run ads for a big company. It's way more efficient and more like bang for the buck, for your buck, to just get sponsors, like to collaborate with creators. Because when you give a set to a creator, first of all, you spend probably less cash than spending money into ads. And then this person is going to actually use the gear and create content for a long period of time. While if you run an ad, then you're just spending money and then you need to spend more money to run more ads. But if you make the investment one time to give your stuff to a creator, then the creator is going to produce content for years probably. So
plus that's the best really investment. Honest. It's super honest and you're there and giving tips and whatnot. So that is really cool. But when Ketos contacted you, did you read twice? Because I usually get emails from like princes that I won $1 million. How did you react? Was that all right? That's the next step. That's obvious that this was going to happen or stuff like that will happen eventually. Or do you think like, could that be a scam?
So as I mentioned, when you went out, when you actually got kicked out from the room.
All right.
So this guy randomly reached out to me on Instagram and just texted me, "I like your content, and I showed your profile to Cyril, which is a big within Ketos." And I was like, "Okay, cool. Thank you very much. I really appreciate it." But you know, I didn't give much weight to this thing. And then probably 2 days later, I got a message, not from Ketos, like from the from a WhatsApp number. And he goes, "I'm Cyril from Ketos. I would love you to try our stuff. Why don't you come to France to visit our atelier and to test our gear?" Oh, that's cool. Because I knew the brand from the incredible boards, because I saw a few in Switzerland, and then I knew like Seb Soji, this guy pumping with Yvonne, but yeah, I was like, damn, this is cool.
Yeah, it's really, and I really liked the video when you showed how it was made, and it's really nice.
It is
really cool. Listen, I have a few more questions.
Please, I'm enjoying one this selfish.
You sometimes in some videos said, "Yeah, if you want to come to Cyprus, we can pump for all together." I saw some videos when people pumped with you, but I can imagine, are you kind of isolated on that island without many people around pumping with you?
Oh, that's so true. Like, I choose to live here because of the job. Now I want to stay here because I based my company here in Cyprus, because taxation wise is just smarter. But I like the place, right? I'm not saying that I'm gonna be here forever, but I like the place. Yeah, as you said, like there are literally no pump foilers here. There are quite a few wing foilers, windsurfers, kite surfers. And there is someone getting into surf foiling and downwinding, but very, very few people. So yeah, I feel quite lonely in my journey. But now I got this friend. He's a very good IQ foiler. I'm gonna tag it now, because if you follow him, you're gonna help him out, because he's gonna go for the next Olympics. He's gonna try to qualify for the next Olympics. He didn't qualify for Paris just for like very, very little. But yeah, and we are pumping together sometimes and doing water sport malakias. Malakias in Greek means like stupid things. That's what we are doing, yeah.
What was he the one, you showed one video where you said that this guy jumped on your board for the first time and it just immediately started pumping. Was that this guy?
Yeah.
That was incredible.
Yeah. Yeah, he's so talented. Incredible, incredible talent, incredible talent.
I have two more things I want to address.
Yeah,
One is your name. Because we cannot leave it out. Because, you know, when I first saw it, Gal Daniele, I wasn't sure which name was which. Maybe you can clarify for all the listeners and viewers your name.
This is this is the question that I was not waiting for.
I know. Because let's get it out, and then it's clear for everyone. Yeah.
You're right. So thank you, actually. So my first name is Gael, which is a French name because my mother is French. And Daniele is my surname. Now it's confusing because in Italian, Daniele is a first name. That's why when everybody, especially from Italy or even sometimes from, I don't know, France or something, they see my surname, so they think that that's my first name because it's actually a name, and then they see this weird first name, so they think that that's just a weird last name. But no, actually my first name is Gael with the two dots, the umlaut over the E, so that's it's Gael and not Gael, it's Gael, and then Daniele, not Daniele because it's Italian. So yeah, that's my name. And but I don't mind if you call me Daniele, I don't mind, because when I was living in Sicily, too complicated for them to pronounce a foreign name. So I was Daniele, and it was fine.
All right. But so it's on record. That's one. Then one other thing, and maybe you can add some more. There was one video where he said you dropped your camera, and we can see the camera go. And I'm not sure if you told me the story that you got it back a couple of days later. It was broken. It was not broken. How did that happen?
Like,
what happened,
like,
exactly?
The 360 camera.
Yeah.
Yeah, I posted this video on Instagram because I was out recording videos, and I was in the flow. Like, nothing could stop me. Because when I'm recording, I try to be as efficient as possible. Like, in one session, in 1 hour, I want to get, sorry, 7 or even 8 or 9 pieces of content, right? So that's I don't have to worry about content for the rest of the week, let's say. So that day it was like probably the fourth or the fifth video that I was recording. Of course, it also takes a few trials before you get the nice shot, the nice take. And then I was just super in the flow, you know. I was just going super relaxed, super chill. So I wasn't really thinking about what I was doing, because I was used to pumping shallow water here in Cyprus. You know, even if I drop the Insta360, oh, who cares? And I take it back. But there it was like, damn, I wasn't used to it, but I was pumping on a lake, and the lake is like 10 meters deep, and you cannot really dive because it's, I don't know, I'm scared. I like free diving, but I'm scared to free dive on the lakes because you don't really see anything, and then it's just, I don't know, dirty. And yeah, I just, I was, you know, you have the stick with the 360 camera, and sometimes I keep it open so that it's easier than to grab the camera, and the shot is cleaner, let's say. But when I dock started, when I placed my feet on the board, I actually hit the stick with my front leg, with my front foot, and I just dropped it. And you know the funny thing, if you realize it, I used to keep my GoPro on my arm to record the audio, because if the Insta360 is like 1 meter or so away from your mouth, then you get a crappy audio, and the audio is very important. So I was keeping my GoPro here to record the audio, and then I was synchronizing the two files in post production. And as soon as I realized that I lost the Insta360, I tried to dive to catch it, but I couldn't see anything because the visibility in lakes is not great. And while I was trying to catch the Insta360, I lost the GoPro.
Oh,
So yeah, 2-2-1. And then
but you got it back.
I wait, because you know, when I was there, I had like few options: cry, complain, dive, or just call help, like,
and
ask for help.
Did you do all three?
I tried not to cry. and then yeah, I was just okay. I'm not trained. I did one stupid mistake, and I'm not gonna make the second one just to try to get it, and then I die in the bottom of a lake. So I just googled like the nearest diving center, diving school, and a super nice lady answered, and like all the divers were on vacation because on holiday it was August or something, so I actually had to wait a few days. I left because I had a flight, and my Insta360 was still there in the bottom of the lake. And then like 5 or 6 days later, a diver went there and found the Insta360. But unfortunately, it was not working. I saw, because it was recording, you know, so I saw that I had like 3 hours of the bottom of the lake. So if I would have taken the Insta360 right away, it was still working, but then after 5 days it was not working anymore, but I had the warranty, so I just shipped it back and I got a new one. Yeah,
but the SD card was still good, and you could take out that video and make a great video. That is nice. The GoPro, did you find the GoPro?
No, the GoPro wasn't found. Yeah.
All right. Then you had some issues with the flight and with your gear. All the time when you come back, or maybe every other time, I don't know how much you're abroad, when you come back, it's like, damn, I can't go pumping. I have to wait another week because my gear is in I don't know where.
Yeah, that's terrible. So yeah, again, I shouldn't blame anybody else. It was my fault because I actually got to the airport a bit too late. And when I dropped the bag, it was probably a bit too late. In Turin, in one of my travels, I was just traveling from Turin to Sicily to visit my family, and when I dropped the bag, they were like, "Okay, it's a bit too late, but don't worry, we're gonna load it, of course." And then when I landed in Catania and I didn't see it, I realized it right away that my bag was still in Turin, so. You know, you can do the procedure for the lost baggages, but Catania Airport is a mess. Like, it's probably the worst airport in Italy, for sure, and probably in Europe. And I spent there 5 days, and after five days, my bag was still not there, apparently. Which is silly, because there are five flights every single day, probably, from Turin to Catania. And normally they're supposed to load it in the following aircraft so that you get it at your destination as soon as possible. But that wasn't the case. And then, the day that I left from Sicily, I went once again to the airport to ask for the bag, and they said that the bag wasn't there. And then my mother, I actually had to take the airplane, and then my mother physically drove to Turin in the airport to ask where the hell my bag was, because it was apparently disappeared. And then in Turin they said, it's in Catania, it landed in Catania the day after he landed there. Oh. So yeah, and then I had to sort of use some connections, some friends that work inside Catania airport, plus the police, thanks to my father, to actually find the bag, because otherwise probably my bag would still be there in Catania. So I found the bag, and then I had no way to get it. Like shipping things from Sicily to Cyprus is insanely expensive. So I just after 10 days or 2 weeks, I don't exactly remember, just flew again from Cyprus to Sicily, essentially just to get my folks back, which is crazy, but it is what it is. Yeah.
And do you keep an air tag or something in your bag?
From that experience, I always keep an air tag on my foil bag, and I look at it all the time, almost probably it's too much, but it is what it is, right?
Yeah. Well, is there anything else, Kyle? Any other story you want to share?
I think it's enough. I overwhelmed people enough. And just once again, thank you, Matt, for this chat. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to share my own little story, my experiences in the last period. And I want to do the same. with you, because I'm pretty sure that. Due to your age, which is
super high.
I'm pretty sure you have a better story than mine to tell.
I don't think so, man. I'm probably pretty boring. But we can think about it maybe for episode 20 or something.
All right, I'm gonna give you a bit of time to script it then.
All right, well then all is left is just gonna tell you who's on the next episode.
Cool.
The next episode is gonna be with Zeno Davac. He's like the OG of the Zurich pump foiling scene, and as you said, and also Maurus from Indiana said, like Zurich is like the epicenter, the mecca of pump foiling, and totally. He's gonna be our next guest.
They said that pump foiling is a Swiss national sport.
You know, it's really if like, and also like Zurich, there's so many docks. I'm trying to do these spot reviews, and it's just one after the other. It doesn't stop. You can pump around Lake Zurich without problem. All right, well that was anyway, great. Thank you for sharing.
We're looking forward to meeting Zeno, and thank you to you, Matt, once again for giving me the opportunity to have this chat.